Welcome to the Government Technology Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Hunsaker. In this episode, we'll be discussing how federal agencies can customize their AI journey to meet their unique data security needs. Over the last few years, federal agencies have used AI to optimize supply chain management, streamline workflows, and improve productivity and user experiences. However, many agencies still rely on on-premises infrastructure to maintain data sovereignty and security, which can make implementing AI feel like an impossible goal. While AI is usually thought to be synonymous with the cloud, it's not the only location where its data-driven power can be harnessed. By building a future-ready network infrastructure that's flexible and adaptable, agencies can choose their ideal location for AI from core to cloud to edge. For a conversation today, I sat down with Jason Langan, Global AI Business Development at Nutanix. I hope you enjoy our conversation today. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Jason. It is a pleasure to sit down and speak with you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go ahead and jump into the first question. Jason, how are federal agencies using or looking to integrate with AI?
Yeah, interesting question. I mean, federal agencies for, you know, very much well over a decade, you know, have been using AI to do predictive analysis, to find anomalies in a data set, to find bad needles in a haystack. But, you know, as I'm sure you're aware, over the last year and a half, 2 years, generative AI has really taken, you know, the industry as a whole by storm. And we're seeing federal agencies use generative AI to do everything from, you know, analyze contracts or potential contracts, prepare for briefings, set meeting agendas, generate really good draft content. So we're really starting to see a shift of the application of AI to more, you know, administrative, kind of in the day-to-day activity type tasks.
Now, when most people think about deploying AI, it's likely they'll assume they need to have a cloud-based infrastructure. So is this a correct assumption?
I think it's partly correct. I think a lot of agencies certainly will start their rapid prototyping, you know, in a public cloud infrastructure. But, you know, one of the things we've seen, and there's a lot of reports out there, whether it's from, you know, Gartner or Forrester, you know, some other analyst firm, where we're seeing agencies and even enterprise organizations who are using the public cloud for prototyping ultimately look to deploy those generative AI applications and those generative AI capabilities in a private cloud on-prem environment, you know, because they're viewing, you know, the model, the prompts that their users are submitting, the logs, the output, they're viewing all of this as very valuable intellectual property. They want to make sure that they've got, you know, absolute control and visibility over these assets.
So let me ask you the how to that. So how can agencies bring AI to on-premises infrastructure to transform their operations?
Yeah, that's another really good question. And, you know, I'll kind of give the preface that, you know, AI is very much based on a containerized, you know, a Kubernetes environment. So for a lot of agencies, it's if they don't have a container strategy, it's figuring out, you know, what Kubernetes platform are we going to deploy? What level of effort is it to get that foundation built? Because all AI applications ultimately are just software, you know, running in these containers. And then the agencies need to think through, okay, how do I get the model into my environment? How do I serve up that model? You know, whether you're using, you know, something from, you know, NVIDIA or even Nutanix Enterprise AI to do that enterprise model repository to serve those models up through an inference endpoint. And then something that I think is really important is thinking through, great, now how do we operationalize, you know, this generative AI application or this generative AI environment? Because it's certainly one thing to stand up the capability, and that's, you know, that's really exciting, and testing and building and then going live is, you know, is a normally a really fun and often a career building endeavor. But now that capability is live, it's going to be online for the next 3, 5, 7+ years. At some point, the phone's going to ring that, hey, this capability is slow, or it seems down, or we're getting, you know, answers we didn't expect from the artificial intelligence. Now, how does the agency begin to troubleshoot that stack? Because now it's a little more complex. And again, for me, something like Nutanix simplifies those day two operations because now you're troubleshooting, many more different vectors, kind of no pun intended, in that artificial intelligence infrastructure.
That's great. Now, let me ask you, how can federal agencies build future-ready IT infrastructure that can leverage innovative technology like AI?
So, I think some of this comes back to the fact that, artificial intelligence applications are containerized apps, meaning they're very portable. It's fairly easy to swap out, last year's vector database that was in vogue and swap in this year's vector database, that's now delivering a new capability. So some of that is just the nature of infrastructure to support artificial intelligence, which is container-based. The other piece is recognizing that, yes, NVIDIA owns the GPU market today and likely will be the major player over the coming years. But it's also important when you're thinking through delivering AI from maybe the data center out to the tactical edge. At the tactical edge, maybe you don't have beefy NVIDIA GPUs. Maybe you're using, a newer technology from Intel or from AMD. So you need a platform, one that, again, makes it easy to operate a containerized environment, two, deliver centralized command and control over the models that are allowed to be used within that agency or within that program of record, make it easy to understand at a high level, what programs, what groups within this agency are actually consuming the generative AI capability. And lastly, again, we go back to day two operations. How easy can I see, what's going on? How quickly can I troubleshoot? How quickly can I understand latency from the endpoint or from the model? So to me, that's kind of the bigger picture of making sure we're future-proofing the generative AI infrastructure that we're building out today.
That's great. So let's switch gears, Jason. How can agencies leverage AI while setting up the proper guardrails to maintain data sovereignty and security?
So what I've seen, this year and, taking examples both from our U.S. federal customers and honestly, federal agencies over in the EU as well, most organizations are looking when it comes time to even get close to production, let's build out these capabilities on-prem, close to the data. So we're, fully confident that the data, the prompts, the model, the logs, the outputs, everything is within our control, which I think is, is a really kind of prudent way to start. And then it comes down to understanding, what specific business or what specific mission challenges are we trying to solve? Because there's a really nice report that Gartner put out earlier this year where they state that, generative AI is the most widely adopted AI technology, in the enterprise, in the government enterprise. However, the number one barrier to adoption, it's not figuring out what GPU, it's not figuring out what model to use, it's quantifying the business or mission value. So to me, the most prudent place to start thinking about an on-prem or private cloud infrastructure, but also having a specific challenge in mind that you're trying to overcome with that generative AI capability is really, really important.
Now, how can these guardrails help lay the foundation for the use of generative AI?
I think the guardrails, when we're talking, whether it's granular role-based access control, whether it's compliance, security, the legal team vetting a model, these are kind of table stakes efforts that we've seen in agencies. Another maybe more forward-thinking approach we've seen in agencies and organizations, they're a little further along their adoption path with generative AI, is they're standing up, AI ethics teams. They're establishing an AI ethics policy within their agency, within their program, within their organization. So they're really thinking through, not just from an IT perspective, but from a legal, from a compliance, from a security perspective, from an operational perspective, how do we ensure that we're operating our generative AI capabilities in a, in a safe and confident manner? And, how do we audit? How do we validate the answers that are coming back? What does that framework look like? And, a lot of agencies are building out, that thought process now. MIT's got a very nice framework that they've got shared, for public consumption. So there's some really good resources out there to help, start getting the juices flowing on how do we think about this from, not just a capability perspective, but also from a compliance and ethics perspective.
This has been very insightful, but before we wrap up, Jason, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Maybe the one thing I will share, I was fortunate, and just very lucky that I was very early in the virtualization space. I mean, this is going back close to two decades ago now, when I was a federal contractor. And again, I was very fortunate to be right place, right time. And it did wonders for my career. We're in a moment that feels very similar to that, but probably exponentially more accelerating, to career growth, to personal development, those that will, again, identify specific challenges, embark on their generative AI journey or help their agency embark on this journey, earlier than later, maybe starting today. I think those folks have a phenomenal upward mobility potential. Again, it's early. There's going to be some experts that establish. There's going to be some leaders that establish with, good clearance levels. I mean, it's a great time to be adopting this technology, not just to serve the agency, but also for your own, personal development and growth.
Thank you, Jason, for joining us today, and a big thank you to our listeners for tuning in. If you're interested in staying up to date on the latest best practices, lessons learned, and proven strategies for leveraging innovative technologies in federal, state, and local government, be sure to visit governmenttechnologyinsider.com. I've been your host, Lucas Hunsker, and until next time, so long.